Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us. On our way to our conversation with our two guests, Amara Jones and Jordan Bloom, let's take a quick look at this day in history. This is a day in the year 580 that Muhammad, the founder of Islam, was born. This is a day when Mary Shelley was born, who wrote the book that we all know, most have not read, I think, Frankenstein. This is also the day that Roy Wilkins was born. Roy Wilkins was born in 1901. He was the second executive director of the NAACP, the great boxing coach for Muhammad Ali and Sugar Ray Leonard. George Foreman, Angelo Dundee was born on this day in 1921. This is the day that Johnny Mann, famous locally here in Baltimore, music director, amazing human being, was born in 1928. Dr. Ruth Westheimer, was born on this day in 1928, as was Warren Buffett in 1930. And Robert Crumb, the great cartoonist, Father Time, Fritz the Cat, and more, was born on this day in 1943. Given we're talking about the question of chemical weapons, it's interesting that in 1146, European leaders got together to outlaw the crossbow, intending to end war for all time. We've been trying that forever. It's not worked yet. This was a day in 1800 when a storm forced suspension of an attack on Richmond, Virginia by Gabriel Prosser, who was a literate slave, a blacksmith, who led a slave rebellion, and they had to stop it. They came in and found him because it was leaked to people. He and 25 other followers were hanged, and as a result of that, it changed a number of things. Virginia and all these state legislators restricted the right of free blacks to live in the South. They stopped the right to read and do more. But it was on this day in 1800 that Gabriel Prosser delayed his rebellion and was captured. This was a day in 1838 that the Mirror of Freedom was founded. Mirror of Freedom was the first African-American magazine published by David Ruggles in New York. It was a freedom journal, part of the New York Committee of Vigilance, which he assisted over 600 refugees, slaves, fleeing slavery. That was the first black magazine published in the United States of America. This is also the day that the Liberty Party was founded, which was the first party in America to take on slavery as an electoral party that had black members in the leadership, like Henry Highland Garnett. This was also the day that John C. Fremont freed slaves of Missouri rebels that Lincoln revoked later in a proclamation. This was also the day that this is an interesting day, thinking about where we are with our economy. In 1935, President Franklin Roosevelt passed the Revenue Act, referred to as the Wealth Tax Act, which taxed rich citizens and big businesses while lowering taxes for small businesses. Maybe we should start talking about that. And let me just... This was also the day in 1956 that there was a high school called Mansfield High School in Mansfield, Texas. And in 1956, a white mob stopped it from being segregated. Not only that happened, the mayor of the town, the police chief, joined a crowd of 300 people, burned three young black children in effigy who were trying to get into that school. The governor of Texas supported it, sent the Texas Rangers in to support segregation. That school was not desegregated until 1965. And this was also the day that in 66, the Constance Baker Motley was confirmed as the first African-American woman to be a U.S. District Court judge. The following year, Thurgood Marshall became the first African-American to sit on the Supreme Court. And there were numerous disturbances around the country in 1969 where people stood up about police brutality, as in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, that erupted on that day. That's a brief look at this day in history, August the 30th. And now we go to our guests. Amara Jones, economic justice contributor for ColorLines.com, served in the Clinton White House. Jordan Bloom, opinion editor at the Daily Caller and board member of Alumni for Liberty, a project for the Students for Liberty. And Amara and Jordan, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages or tweet at Mark Steiner, and I'll see what you have to say there. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in the conversation. Let's begin with what is at the top of the news, gentlemen. Amara, beginning with you, that is the possibility that now the U.S. may go it alone in some surgical strike into Syria because The alleged, not the alleged use of weapons, weapons clearly were used, but alleged that the Syrian government used it. And there are a lot of people not trusting the intelligence coming out because of the history of this country and the Bush White House and White House, the Johnson White House, and they're lying to the public about bringing us into certain wars. So people are very skeptical. The British Parliament said no, that we're not going to participate in this. And it's a very complex question. So I'm curious where you come down on all this.
Yeah, well, I think there's the talk of France going in. I think President Hollande came in, out and said that the fact that the British weren't going to join whatever military strikes might take place doesn't preclude France from doing so. And he doesn't need the French Parliament's approval as president of France. He can authorize that on his own and looks to do that. I think, unfortunately, that the strikes are necessary, and I know that that's not a popular view. I think to say that just because the Iraq went so badly and that we were lied to and misled, that every single instance of military use in the future or the use of force in the future follows the same pattern. That was an anomaly. One of the things that made it so outrageous is that it was an abuse and misuse of the systems of government to pursue an objective that the government at the time most likely knew was false. And that is, that was an extreme situation. But we can't live in a world where people are allowed to use weapons of mass destruction and there not be a response. It's one of the reasons why we have an international system in the first place. And I really would wonder what people would say to that. How do you allow people to... governments use weapons of mass destruction that are not used in warfare, but that are used against civilians. If he let off a tactical nuclear device, which biological and chemical weapons are classified in the exact same way as nuclear weapons, would we be saying the same thing? This was a mass attack that used a horrific weapon, and that just can't go unanswered. And the fact that the Security Council is paralyzed because Syria is an ally of Russia, or the Chinese also don't want to get involved for their own domestic politics, or the fact that the British government is in the same space, doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a response to the Assad regime. I think a lot of people think that it may be a little too little too late. That's what I have. But whether or not it's justified or something that we should do, I think is pretty clear. I think the question was, whether or not we should have armed the rebels a year ago, which would have prevented us from having to do this in the first place or get involved. And just one last point, this is one of those situations where intervention has actually created a problem and not solved it. It's the opposite of Iraq in that. Iraq intervention caused a problem that led to a disaster. Here, not intervening is what has caused the problem to fester and to become a disaster. Not doing anything in this instance, I don't really think is the answer.
Well, I mean, but so let me just, so until Jordan comes back, let me just throw these questions out. 410-319-8888. I mean, there's no clear, everything I've read so far, I don't see any clear evidence other than what President Obama said and what the Israelis and Saudis have said, that we know that it is the Syrian government. Are we supposed to take this on face value just because President Barack Obama says so?
Mass attack. Some of the other instances that there's been some debate, chemical weapons have been used 14 times.
We used them in Vietnam. It was called Ancient Orange, and people are still suffering from it.
Well, yeah, let me just make this point. This was a mass attack that required large quantities of the weapons and delivery systems. And to our knowledge, those are not in the possession of rebels. Rebels don't have artillery. These were apparently fired from long-range artillery pieces that are only in possession of the Syrian government. The rebels don't have them.
Well, that's questionable, too.
Is that rebels only have small arms. That's one of the reasons why they're not doing well. And one of the reasons why people wanted us to arm them was to give them greater weapons. And secondly, they don't have possession of large large stockpiles of chemical weapons.
But we don't know that either, Amara.
Exclusively in the hands of the government.
But we don't know that either. We don't know.
Yeah, we really don't know. We do know that.
Because
we don't know what. Because those are.
Amara, we don't.
Frankly, there are certain designated sites in Syria where those weapons are held.
But we don't know what they.
Have enough of them.
There have been a lot of reports that chemical weapons have been seized by rebels. Those reports have been coming out for the last couple of years. We don't know who has what. We don't know if Al-Qaeda did this, masterminded it. We don't know if the Syrians. We really don't know yet who did this. And the question is, what will a small strike of missiles do to prevent them from using chemical weapons? Probably nothing, if, in fact, they're using them.
I think what it would do in this – the problem here is deterrence.
Actually, you know what? I think Jordan is back with us. Let me let Jordan jump in. I'll jump. I'll pull back. Jordan, you're on the air.
Yeah, sorry about that. Little technical difficulties there.
That's right.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right that there's just so much uncertainty. And I think the real indicator that even the governments of the U.S. and the U.K. are taking that seriously is the fact that they've walked back their claims of absolute certainty as to who used the chemical weapons. Initially, the Obama administration had said they had the smoking gun. That was the phrase they used. But they're not saying that now. They're saying it's very likely that it was the Syrian government that used it. So there's even both the governments of the U.S. and the U.K. have acknowledged that there's some serious uncertainty here. And I think it's very difficult to justify an attack based on that.
Well, let me push back a little bit on the other side then. I mean, but when is a response correct? When things like chemical weapons are used. I think back, even though this wasn't chemical weapons, back in 1938, Neville Chamberlain negotiated the Munich Agreement, which ceded certain land to Czechoslovakia. After that, the Nazi Germany just kind of pushed its way across Europe because nobody wanted to take a stand. At what point, we didn't take a stand in Rwanda. We saw what happened in Rwanda. At what point is it the responsibility of nations to intercede? Whether we're talking about chemical weapons or something else, what is it? Where do we meet that point?
Well, I'd say there's not really a hard and fast line, but the Assad regime is certainly not an expansionist totalitarian power. So I think there's a pretty big distinction there between them and, say, Nazi Germany.
No, I'm not saying I'm not trying to equate them with Nazi Germany. I'm trying to say at what point do we say enough is enough in any regard?
I think that's probably a question for the UN. And I guess there's nothing in the Constitution that says we do have a responsibility to intervene in a humanitarian situation like that. So it really is the, at least according to, you know, international law, it's the United Nations job to determine that sort of thing.
So, Amara, your thoughts?
Well, look, I mean, three things. One, any past reports of the use of chemical weapons and possible confusion of who used what were in small quantities. That is the ability of someone to be able to get their hands on a small amount and be able to do something with. And there has been some question about that. But I think that even that, the last sort of report that I saw said they're pretty sure that the governments used chemical weapons maybe up to 14 times on a really small scale. There's some question about whether or not there were three incidences involving the rebels. But once again, this was a mass attack using larger quantities and weapons and materials that we know that are only in the hands of the government. The second thing is look at a map of where Syria is. It is where all of the strategic interests of the United States collide. There is not one neighbor of Syria in which the United States doesn't have a very important interest. Syria itself has never been terribly important. That was one of the reasons why it was created in the 1920s as a buffer state. But if you look at all the states that are around it, there are very critical strategic interests. And you cannot have where Syria is the use of indiscriminate, large-scale weapons of mass destruction and there not be some sort of response. It's just not going to fly.
So,
and the third thing is that we do have a responsibility, that we set up an international system in order to promote certain values. And one of the key values that we've been promoted since the 1960s for the past 50 years is nonproliferation and the curbing of the use of weapons of mass destruction. And this would be a horrible change in that particular strategic goal of the United States if we allow chemical weapons to be used indiscriminately against civilians without there being an answer.
Well, so let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. Wayne, you're on the air.
Against civilians without there being an answer.
Wayne, can you turn down your phone, your radio, please? Thanks. Hi, Wayne. You're on the air, Wayne.
Yes, thank you. Listen, I do agree with the comments being made by the gentleman, at least the last comment that was made, that there is an international system that has been established and protocols have been established. But the United States do need to be very careful. And commentators like the gentleman also need to be careful, not just to regurgitate the talking points of our administration, but certainly to have clarity in terms of what it is that our goals are. We see the effects of rushing to judgment and making assumptions based on just talking points and things that are circulated within the media or the governmental agencies. Americans have been burned by this, or morality has been scarred by it, or integrity has been scarred by it, and we certainly have international monitors on the ground through the international system that the United States has assisted in setting up, which is the United Nations. We need to allow for the United Nations to complete its job. When there's clarity on that, then perhaps a decision can be made as to the best process of moving forward. But we cannot repeat the errors of the last 10 years in rushing to judgment without a clear and precise allocation of fault, and certainly to further hurt the integrity and morality of the United States. The United States is better than this. And, of course, our public deserves much better in terms of leadership. And coming from the media, coming from the White House, we certainly need to have clarity. This we do not have at this time, and we certainly need to ensure that we have it, and we have a mandate, a clear mandate.
Okay.
As far as the strategic interest of the United States, of course, as the gentleman said, partners surrounding Syria, that is true. But it also should allow us to move more cautiously, not to rush to judgment, because this could be a real hotbed that you open a can of whoopass on the United States.
Wayne, thank you so much for your call. Let's get one more call in here and come back to our two guests, 410-319-8888. Afrikan, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Afrikan speaking.
You're on the air.
Yes, you hear me? This is Afrikan.
You're on the air.
Yes. With the shootings here in Baltimore, and we're upset about that, how can we be upset about the shootings in Baltimore when the government doing the same thing?
Okay.
So therefore, war is not the answer. I repeat, how can we be upset with the shootings here when the government is doing the same thing and been doing the same thing? You hear it, listening audience? Wake up, listening audience.
Thank you, Afrikan. So coming back to this, I wonder, and let me come back very quickly, Amara, and then to Jordan. I mean, if the United States, with or without France, throws these missile attacks onto parts of Syria where munitions dumps or whatever they're going to hit, what does that do to stop, let's say for argument's sake, that Assad did do this? And I'm not convinced at this point that Assad did this from everything I've read. Because I do not trust what comes out of the government after all these kind of lies we've been told over the years. So I want to see more before I, as an American, believes it. But even if that's true that Assad did it, what does lobbing missiles into that part of Syria? Arab intellectual said in this program the other day, Ali Zagheb, made the mention. He said, look, I hate Assad, but do I want al-Qaeda then to take over Syria? Is that what we're going to do? Weaken him so the Al Qaeda can take over? I mean, this is we're in a very tough situation here, Amara. This is not simply saying that a simple missile attack will somehow stop all chemical weapon use, I should say.
Right. So I'll take both of your points. I think first, one of the problems, Mark, is that we haven't answered or responded to the red line that we drew, well over a year ago. The fact that the president did not respond in any way to the red line that he used when there was evidence that the Syrian government used chemical weapons on multiple occasions, has what we've gradually seen is an escalation from that. And so the attacks have grown larger and more brazen. And I think that one of the things is that the Assad regime believes that it can act with impunity. And so one of the things to the point of the missile attack is not necessarily to, you know, go in and have regime change. But what it is designed to do is to say that we're serious, that you cannot use weapons of mass destruction in your conflict, and that if you do, there will be consequences. So that's the point of them is to change the calculus of the regime, not necessarily to change the outcome of the war, because our interest here in this attack is very specifically focused on the weapons of mass destruction piece of it. Although I would make a larger argument that I think we have other things involved, but that's not what their goal is. The second thing on your second point is that it's a messy situation. Excuse me.
To say the least.
But that's international relations. That's relationships between countries. And that's why you actually have to be involved. The worst thing that you can do is to be absent. And one of the things that's happened in Syria is that the United States' absence and lack of a coordinated policy in which our actions match our words is that we've actually allowed al-Qaeda to develop and to strengthen because we did not back the forces early on that would have been more pro on the interests of the United States. And so once again, I'm making the argument that our absence from the conflict has helped worsen it, and that continued absence will only extend that. And so it's a messy situation. You can't point to me an instance in which the United States has done well or ill, including, you know, the famous example of World War II. That wasn't a horrible, messy, confusing, contradictory mess. That was a war in which we ended up allying with the country that would end up becoming possibly, you know, our mortal enemy for 30 or 40 years. These things are not clean. What you have to do is you have to make decisions about what your interests are and then to pursue them. It's not in the interest of the United States to have indiscriminate use of weapons of mass destruction.
So let me
that's just not in our interest.
In my just interest of time, I have to let Jordan back in this. Jordan?
Yeah, well, I think it was irresponsible of the president to be drawing that line. And the assumption certainly shouldn't be that we have some responsibility to be involved in Syria because we don't have a national security interest in being there. And the fact is, you've got to think about why the Assad regime has resorted to these, if they have, and it's, you know, it seems fairly likely that they have. Resorted to these extreme means. We're talking about if the Assad regime were deposed. We're talking about potentially the extermination of the Alawites and other religious minorities in Syria. Do we really want to be complicit in that? The rebels are abducting Christian clergy and killing them. They're murdering Alawites. We don't want to be helping these people. It's a big mistake.
So, and I mean, I think there's a complexity to this that I think that we are not getting. And I think part of the reason we see al-Qaeda coming in the first place, if we hadn't gotten a war in Iraq, al-Qaeda wouldn't have the strength they have now in Syria. Mm-hmm. That's without a doubt. So 410-319-8888. Jay, you're on the air. Hi, Jay, you're on the air.
Yes. My comment is this. Try diplomacy. Diplomacy is the only answer. And build confidence by your building steps. The United States did not build any confidence building major steps to get the confidence of the people in the dispute. And that's what they should focus on instead of going for war. This is war is not the solution and not the answer. Ultimately, you have to have diplomacy. Diplomacy is the only answer. Bring Iran, bring other parties into the table. Talk to them, do humanitarian aid instead of fighting, and help the mankind. That's what my comment is.
Jay, thank you so much. We'll take a brief break and come right back with our guests and continue this conversation with Imara Jones and Jordan Bloom, 410-319-8888. And I'll have a different question for them before we end this segment, so stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. And good to have you all here with us. We are here with Imara Jones, who is economic justice contributor for Colorlines.com. served in the Clinton White House, and Jordan Bloom, opinion editor at the Daily Caller, board member for of Alumni for Liberty, a project of the Students for Liberty. Let me switch gears for a moment, then we'll go back to the phones before we end our segment, and move into our next segment with Rose Aguilar. The Obama administration announced to the Attorney General's office that they were not going to sue or interfere or block the medical and recreational use of marijuana in the 20 states that have changed their laws or are changing their laws, or Washington, D.C. What are your thoughts on that? This is a huge shift. I might go along with what the Attorney General said about how he's trying to shift sentencing issues, at least in the federal side. What are your thoughts on this, Jordan? And then we'll go to Imara.
Well, it's good to hear, but I honestly can't say that I've got a lot of faith in it, because they said the same thing about medical pot, and then the DOJ cracked down and started raiding dispensaries in California. There have been hundreds of raids.
Yeah, but they're saying that will no longer occur, is what they're saying.
Excuse me?
They're saying now that will no longer occur.
Right, and they said that before, too, that they weren't going to intervene. But here's the thing. It's nice
that
they're relaxing their grip on illegitimate power, but the federal government has no business regulating interstate commerce or intrastate commerce in marijuana. So they shouldn't be involved at all, really.
Imara, what do you think this means?
I think it means that they're serious about turning the Justice Department to focus on serious crime and to stop the practices that have led to the mass jailing of African-American and Latino men over the past 30 years, and that's a really welcome sign. And I think it's both the result of the fact that there are limited government resources. We just can't keep jailing and housing everyone for relatively small offenses. And I also think that it personally troubles the conscience of the Attorney General, who knows that it's wrong. And I think both of those things are coming together to allow for a substantial change in policy, and it's good.
And one more quick thought on a totally different subject. And then we're going to get some callers in here in our last 5 minutes on this particular segment of our show. It's interesting to watch this battle over health care, how some states that are saying, well, no, we're not going to abide by it, even though it's a federal law. And whether you agree or disagree with what people are calling Obamacare, with this Affordable Health Care Act, it's interesting to watch these machinations going on in the country. Do you think anything will really come of this, Imara?
How do you mean, come of the law?
Do you think that people are speculating that means the Affordable Health Care Act will go down in flames?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be more successful than anyone thinks. I think that there is pent-up demand for healthcare in this country. I think that whenever there's a new program in the United States that's nationwide, there's always a lot of controversy that starts with its beginning. You know, let's remember that when Social Security started, it didn't cover blacks. There were states that were resistant to Social Security. The same was true for Medicaid, and the same is true for Medicare, and they ended up being really successful. So I think the same is going to be true for this. And we've already seen that premiums overall in healthcare, the growth in those have slowed. Double digits down to the mid single digits, just as a result of the law, and we've seen that healthcare rates in a lot of states, such as New York and others, once the law is implemented, are going to come down further. So, I think that this is just a continued campaign on the part of the Republican Party and the right to discredit the law, but it's going to be implemented and it's going to be more successful than people think.
Jordan.
Well, I think that there are a whole lot of different studies that are saying that the premiums continue to rise, including a National Journal analysis this week. But I think one of the interesting things is how often the Obama administration has flouted its own deadline in implementing the law, most egregiously, I think, by delaying the employer mandate but keeping the individual mandate for next year. And that gives the Republican Party an interesting rhetorical strategy, because it's kind of a crony capitalist thing. They're letting the businesses off the hook, but you're still on the hook. And but there are other things too. You see UPS and UVA dropping spouses from the health plans. I think it's a rolling disaster. But I don't think the Republican Party should defund it, which is what they're kind of debating right now. I think if anything, they should say implement it as fast as possible, so we can watch it go down in flames.
Well, we're going to have more discussions on this, see where this will end up going. I mean, this is a very complex question, but it looks like. Well, I'll leave it there. Let me go to the phones here. Try to get a couple calls in here before we have to move on. 410-319-8888. Joe, you're on the air. Hi, Joe. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. The whole issue here is chemical weapons that are being used against the Syrian people. We can't afford to get involved in this. This is a Muslim issue. You have the Iranians, you have the Saudi Arabians, you have the Arab Emirates. Let them deal with this issue. Let them deal with that regime. Our closest ally, Great Britain, has flat out said they're not going to get involved. We can't afford to do that. We can't afford another two-front war. We can't afford the monetary drain. We can't afford a drain on our military personnel. And I think it's a wrong move to make. I know that our president has a huge compassionate heart, but this is one time I have to disagree with our government and in regards to getting involved in this.
Thank you, Joe. Although I would say it's not really a Muslim issue because it involves the complexity of Arab society, which have many different streams of Islam, plus Syria has one of the largest Christian populations in the Arab world. It's more complex than just a Muslim issue. I just want to throw that out. Let's get another quick thought here before we go back to our guest. Rosalind, you're on the air. Rosalind, you're on the air?
Oh, yes.
Hi. Hi. You're on the air, Rosalind. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to make a comment. I don't understand why the United States is always in somebody else's country, especially of late, dealing with weapons of mass destruction, and they don't even deal with the weapons of mass destruction that's right here in this country, in the cities, you know, because the people aren't bringing the drugs, the crack, and the cocaine and the dope into the cities. The government is bringing it in, you know, and we know with Oliver North that they even purchased drugs so they could buy weapons. So the government is the one bringing the drugs in, but yet they're so concerned about the people in Syria that died through chemical war, some through chemicals. I mean, come on, be real.
Thank you, Rosalind. We're about to take a break from here, and I'd like to get very fast closing thoughts here, about a minute apiece, from Jordan Bloom and then Amara Jones. Jordan?
Sorry, in regards to Obamacare or Syria?
Whatever you like.
Oh, well, I hope we don't intervene in Syria. I wish the anti-war left that we saw in 2003 were out there on the streets. But now it looks like it's only the libertarians, which is, you know, nice to see. Maybe that signals a sea change, and I'm hopeful for that.
Amara Jones, what are your thoughts?
You know, it's a troubling situation, and it's not where anyone would want to be. But I think that, once again, I don't think that it's either in the interest of the United States or in the interest of the world, we as human beings, to allow for weapons of mass destruction to be used on a mass scale, causing mass casualties, and not to respond. And one of my questions is that it has been clear for quite some time that this was likely where the United States was going to end up, that we were going to end up having to take some sort of action in Syria. And my question is why the administration hasn't been out making the case in a much more forceful manner, explaining to the American people why this was in our interest, why it might be in our interest, and why, if we ever got to this point, why it was necessary to go forward. I think that's one of the reasons why there's a backlash, because it seems to be coming out of nowhere. We know that the president himself has resisted action. And so there needs to be a thorough explanation of how he has gotten to the point of being where most of the American people are, to a different place. I think that's important.
Amara Jones, economic justice contributor for ColorLines.com, and Jordan Bloom, opinion editor at The Daily Caller. Thank you both so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you all on. Thank you so much. On our way to our next segment, let me just say that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com.